We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
With St. Patrick's Day coming up on Sunday, you'll be hearing a lot of stories about the Irish, and many will be celebrating their Irish heritage. One of the most infamous periods in American history, and certainly here in Pennsylvania, involved the Molly Maguires. The Molly Maguires were a secret organization of Irish coal miners in the anthracite coal region of Pennsylvania in the late 1800s. Assassinations and violence grew throughout the area because of poor working conditions and ethnic tensions, leading to 16 killings. The Molly Maguires were thought to be responsible, and 20 supposed members were executed. Kevin Kenny is the author of the 1998 book, Making Sense of the Molly Maguires. He also was a professor of history and the Glucksman Professor in Irish Studies at New York University. Dr. Kenny is with us today. Dr. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. Pleasure to be here.
All right, so who were the Molly Maguires?
Who were the Molly Maguires? Nobody agreed at the time. Historians haven't agreed since. I would say we need to avoid two extremes. One is that they were simply savages who killed people for the sake of killing people. Believe it or not, that's how they were described in the 19th century. The other is that they were simply innocent victims, because 20 men were hanged, but there were 16 other dead bodies on the stage at the end, and somebody killed them.
You know, you said something that I really find fascinating, is that here it is 150 years later, and historians still can't agree on this. Why is it so difficult to pin down what actually happened and who were the Molly Maguires?
Well, I would say there's a perception out there that what historians do is assemble the facts and put them together like a jigsaw puzzle. And that would be great if history was that simple, but it wouldn't be very interesting, because we have to understand that people disagreed fundamentally at the time, and historians then register those disagreements later. Imagine somebody writing the history of our period today, 50 years from now. Look at how we disagree, and historians engage with that disagreement.
There seems to be even some debate as to whether there actually was a group called the Molly Maguires. Was there?
So at the time, in the 1870s, people blamed the killings on a secret society that was imported directly from the Irish countryside into industrial Pennsylvania. The problem is the evidence that survives. The evidence for that narrative was written down by a Pinkerton detective agent who went in, worked undercover, and was an informer against his own people. So that's the story we have. We don't have evidence from the Molly Maguires themselves, whoever they were, speaking in their own voice. So again, I want to avoid two extremes. One is that there was this terrible conspiracy of inherently violent Irish people with no place in America. The other is that they were simply framed, that it was a figment of the nativist or anti-labor imagination. The truth is somewhere between or beyond those two.
Just for context's sake, I want to make sure that we identify a couple other organizations. What was the Workers' Benevolent Association?
The Working Men's Benevolent Association was the most powerful trade union in the United States in its time, between 1868 and 1875. It mobilized 35,000 mine workers, regardless of their religious background, their ethnic background, or their skill level. Protestant and Catholic, foreign-born and native-born, miners and laborers. And that organization unequivocally condemned violence as a strategy in labor disputes on moral grounds and on tactical grounds. So that's one organization with which the Molly Maguires were confused, because the enemies of organized labor claimed that the Molly Maguires were just the terrorist wing of the trade union.
Okay, how about the Order of the Hibernians?
That's the second organization with which the Molly Maguires were conveniently confused by their enemies. The Ancient Order of Hibernians, the AOH, it still exists today. It's an ethnic fraternal organization that helps the group. The problem is that there is evidence that local lodges, local branches of that organization in Schuylkill County and Carbon County in the mining country were used to organize activities that, shall we say, were less than fraternal. In other words, if there was a Molly Maguire conspiracy, which there was of some kind, because they did kill people, it was organized behind the cover of the local AOH. The AOH, when it wrote its official history after the Molly Maguire affair, airbrushed the Mollies out of the story altogether. The local lodges that did exist are not even included in the story.
Okay, so now we've kind of set this up, described who's involved, or at least the organizations involved. Irish immigrants worked in the coal mines in the anthracite region of Pennsylvania, what we here in Pennsylvania call the coal regions. What were the working conditions like?
Working conditions underground in mining communities are always difficult and harsh. It's brutal work. People died of miners' lung in those days. They still do. I can tell you that the fatality rates in mining accidents were three times as high in the anthracite region of Pennsylvania as they were in Europe. It's really difficult work. There's also a division based on class and ethnicity, because most of the skilled miners, and this was really an elite workforce who built the mines and then freed the coal from the coal face, most of them were British, English or Welsh. Most of them were Protestant. Some of the skilled miners were Irish, but most of the laborers were Irish. It's a very important distinction between being a laborer and a miner, because it comes down to this. The skilled miner will come into the mine underground in the morning. They will free the coal from the coal face by using powder to explode it out of the coal face. Then they'll go home. The Irishman will stay down underground all day loading that coal into carts. It's a different kind of work. The union brought the two sides together. The Molly Maguires represented the marginalized and the exploited.
So there was a major catastrophe in a mine in northeastern Pennsylvania that kind of set up or motivated many, many thousands of miners to join the union, right?
There was a terrible disaster from memory at Avondale. I think that's the one you're referring to. It was one of several. That was an explosion in a breaker. A fire in a coal breaker directly above the mine, and the breaker collapsed into the mine shaft. That's a spectacular example of a systematic pattern. Mining is very dangerous work.
Why was it more dangerous here in the United States than in Europe?
Partly in the anthracite region, the coal is very hard to extract. And most of the anthracite region of Pennsylvania contains most of the world's anthracite. Anthracite is hard coal. In the process of geological formation, that next along the line is diamonds, pure carbon. Anthracite is one step before diamonds. It's the most high quality coal you can get. It emits very little smoke compared to the softer coal that you find out, say, in the bituminous region in western Pennsylvania. But it's hard to extract. It's really hard to extract. You have to blast it from the coal face. And it wasn't really until the late 19th century, with the introduction of deep shaft mining, going hundreds of feet underground, that the richest coal could be extracted, and then strip mining in the 20th century. So you go back to the rough and ready 19th century when people were just trying this out. You had hundreds of small operators, small businessmen, You didn't have big corporate control. You did up around Wilkes-Barre and Scranton. You didn't down south. And it's down south in the lower region in that chaotic, almost frontier-like environment that Molly Maguireism takes root.
So we're getting to the point, Dr. Kenny, where the violence really takes off in the coal region of Pennsylvania. First of all, what was the Philadelphia and Reading Coal and Iron Company?
Philadelphia and Reading Coal and Iron Company is a subsidiary of the Philadelphia and Reading Railroad. We know it as the Reading Railroad, presided over by one of the robber barons of the Gilded Age, Franklin Benjamin Gowan. And it's Franklin Benjamin Gowan who hires the Pinkerton Detective Agency to go, James McParland, the agent in question, goes in undercover to spy on the Irish and see what they're up to. Now, Gowan's plan is to duplicate in the lower region the structure of corporate control that exists in the upper region. Instead of the chaos of hundreds of small operators, he wants his railroad to control not just the distribution of coal down to Philadelphia, but the actual mining or extraction of coal. He's got three obstacles in his path. I'll mention them briefly. One is his corporate charter doesn't allow him to own coal mines. You can get around that problem easily in the Gilded Age through bribery. You bribe the legislature. So that problem is solved. Secondly, there are hundreds of small entrepreneurs in his path. He buys them out. And by the 1870s, he's securing monopoly control over the production as well as the distribution of coal. Thirdly, the labor movement. You've got this really powerful trade union. Alongside them, you've got this shadowy group, the Molly Maguires, whoever they were. Gowan's strategy is to collapse that distinction and argue that the Molly Maguires are just the terrorist wing of the union, even though the union men say no to violence on moral and tactical grounds.
So there's no short answer to this question. But would you describe what happened in the 1860s and 1870s that led to the trials and the executions of the Molly Maguires?
There were two waves of violence attributed to the Molly Maguires. The first was in the 1860s during the Civil War. It was a mixture of rudimentary labor organizing and opposition to the military draft, to conscription, in the same category as the New York City draft riots, which are more famous. Six people were killed in that violence. Nobody was convicted at the time. The second wave of violence was in the middle of the 1870s, and it directly followed the destruction of the labor union. The labor union went down to defeat in the middle of the worst national economic depression the country had ever seen in the 1870s. The labor union, the WBA, was crushed. Into the vacuum stepped the Molly Maguires. Six more killings took place in the summer of 1875. That's the context in which it unfolds. The killings in the 1860s were traced retroactively to the Molly Maguires in a mopping up operation. They got the big wigs, Alexander Campbell out in Carbon County, Patrick Hester in Northumberland County, and John Kehoe in Schuylkill County. That's the context. And the explanation is Franklin Gowan's attempt to secure monopoly control over the production and distribution of anthracite in the lower region and eliminating all obstacles in his path.
Those six killings in the 1860s, as you said, were in response to the military draft during the Civil War. And you said that they were charged retroactively. I mean, that was like a decade later that they were tried for that. But were those six murders? I mean, did the Molly Maguires, or at least the people who were identified as the Molly Maguires, did they commit those murders?
We don't know. My sense of the 20 men who were hanged, my sense is that some were guilty as charged, some were possibly innocent as charged, and others were probably guilty of other crimes. Right? I've got it. My position is that there were Molly Maguires and they killed people. And I, as a historian, need to figure out why. I'm not trying to figure out was that right or wrong. I don't believe in killing people, right? So it's not a moral question. It's a historian's question to try and explain, to try and make sense of what happened. I will tell you that John Kehoe, was the alleged ringleader of the whole Molly Maguire thing. He was based in Schuylkill County. He was high up in the AOH. He was active in politics. He was a marked man, and he was convicted in 1877 of the very first Molly Maguire killing, which took place in 1862.
And he also was pardoned by Pennsylvania Governor Milton Schapp in 1979. So apparently there was some question about his guilt. But let's go to the 1870s. Who was being killed? Who was being targeted?
Variety of targets. They included mine superintendents and bosses who were discriminating against the Irish by giving better work to Welsh or British workers or paying them higher wages for the same work. There were also there was a kind of an ethnic gang warfare between the Irish and the Welsh. So they were attacking each other. So some of the victims were Welsh miners and local people. And the third category was there were some public officials. A policeman was killed. Magistrates were attacked. So three main targets, employers, Welsh miners, and some public officials.
So the trials themselves, this is not something that we probably would recognize today. In fact, this is unique, I would say, in American history. Talk about those trials.
Okay, so as historians, we try and judge things by the standards of the time rather than our own time when justice is supposedly impartial. Even by the standards of the time, the trials really were a travesty. I'll give you a couple of measures of that. Firstly, membership of the AOH was presented as de facto evidence of being a Molly Maguire. Secondly, there were no Irish Catholics on the juries. Thirdly, and this will really shock people, the star prosecuting attorneys were railroad lawyers, and the biggest star of all was Franklin Benjamin Gowan. He came up to the mining region from Philadelphia, and he served as the lead prosecutor in several of the trials, and he published his courtroom speeches as pamphlets, and they were widely covered in the newspapers. So draw your own conclusions on the impartiality of justice.
Just to take that a little bit further, the state was not involved. There was not a county prosecutor or a county district attorney as we would have today. This is from the company itself that prosecuted the case. Is that right?
In effect, because the company employed the Pinkerton detectives to arrest the men. It had its own private police force, the Coal and Iron Police, who also helped arrest the men. The prosecuting attorneys were railroad lawyers. There were defense attorneys. You have to have a defense in the American system. But really, you know, they were going through the motions.
So I think you answered this question earlier when I was going to ask, was justice served? But you said that you do believe that there were some of the people who were on trial who did were involved in killings, maybe some people who were innocent. So I'll put it out there just to raise the point about justice. How much justice was served here?
The procedurally, the trials were not just. We can look at this in one way. Around the time I published that book in 1998, 25 years ago, I put in a plug, a 25th anniversary edition of that book has just been published because it's a popular story in the annals of American labor and immigration. Around the time I published the book, the local tourist board in Schuylkill County, you know, where the economy is really struggling, started to put together Molly Maguire reunions. And so descendants of the Molly Maguire started to come. Then it got more interesting because descendants of men killed, allegedly, by the Molly Maguire started to come.
Uh-oh.
And I would say in terms of justice and memory, there's a lot of empathy in my book for the Molly Maguires who died on the scaffold. But as I get older and as I reflect, I also have to account for those 16 dead bodies on the stage, and somebody killed them too. And so to reiterate, my task as a historian is not to sit in moral judgment on that. I'm just trying to understand how, under desperate conditions, some people will actually resort to violence as a tactic to combat their exploitation. There's no doubt in my mind that some Irish immigrant workers did that.
This reunion, how did the descendants of those who were executed, the Molly Maguires, get along with those who were murdered?
They got along with very well and with great dignity, as we're all human beings.
I guess 150 years later, it's a little easier to forget when you're not, you don't know the people who were actually killed. I mentioned Kehoe being pardoned. And again, this is so fascinating that 100 years after these executions, these killings, that Governor Shapp in 1979 pardoned Kehoe. Was he innocent?
The evidence would suggest that he was not guilty as charged. He may have been up to other things, I don't know. But boy, to convict him of a crime committed 15 years earlier on the evidence presented, I think the governor was right. He got a posthumous pardon. John Keogh was the alleged head of the conspiracy. He certainly was the head of the AOH, which really condemned him to death. He ran a tavern called the Hibernian House in Gerardville. And when I did my research 30 years ago, I met his descendants. Joe Wayne still ran the Hibernian House and had all the paraphernalia. Joe Wayne's mother, Alice Wayne, and Joe were active in getting a posthumous pardon with the support of the Pennsylvania Labor History Society for John Kehoe, and they succeed.
Kevin Kenny is author of the 1998 book, and as he mentioned, the 25th anniversary copy of Making Sense of the Molly Maguires. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Scott.